Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.
Hello, I'm David Thornton, your host for this week's episode of Friends with Money. The global supply chain is in the grips of crisis. Energy shortages, a lack of shipping containers, and too few semiconductors, among other things, threaten to derail the global economy and bring about stagflation, the toxic mix of slow growth and high inflation. To find out what the ripple effects could be for Australia, we spoke to Sam McPherson, Head of Treasury at Early Trade, Australia's largest working capital marketplace. We discussed what parts of the Australian economy have been most affected, and what implications this will have for consumers and businesses. Sam, the global supply chain seems to be in arrest. What's driving the problem and what impact will it have on prices globally and here in Australia?
Yeah, I think if you've read, you know, just about any sort of mainstream media over the past three to six months, there's a good chance, you know, they've covered some of the global supply chain issues that we're experiencing. You know, some of the headlines have obviously been around global timber shortage. We've had shipping container issues, even fuel and energy crisis in the UK and China. And then over and above that, you know, there's been a longer term issue with some semiconductor supplies out of Asia as well. This is all combining, you know, with the Suez Canal blockage that we experienced in March and April this year. So we're still trying to recover from that perspective. But if we actually look in isolation, you know, there's really three key reasons that these supply chains are experiencing issues. Firstly, you know, when we look at the lockdowns that we've obviously experienced across the world over the past 12 to 18 months, that's caused factories to either shut down or reduce capacity significantly. Secondly, demand has shifted, you know, away from services and into goods. We've seen, you know, restaurants, cafes, bars, tourism, they weren't really an option. So people have spent, you know, some of that government stimulus has certainly sort of gone towards increasing goods consumption. And the flow and effect of that has been, one, we've had a shortage of shipping containers and also a mislocation, meaning, you know, they weren't where they necessarily needed to be to actually meet the demand for those goods. That's driven, you know, shipping container prices to all-time highs. They've more than doubled this year alone. And unsurprising, that's also taken with it, you know, delivery times have blown out. Order backlogs have gone to new highs as well. I think it's important to look at, you know, that's the global supply chain. As you said, you know, it's the connectivity of multiple supply chains is the reality of it. But if we actually look here onshore in Australia, there was an ABS survey done in April this year, and more than 40% of Australian businesses reported that those supply chain issues are impacting them to a great extent. You know, obviously, certain sectors or certain industries were impacted more than others. You know, transport services, wholesale trade, some of the utility services. But I think one of the really unfortunate parts is that the small and medium-sized business community has actually been hit the hardest. Taking all this into account, we actually produce a quarterly supply chain scorecard that looks at, you know, some of those external factors. Then we also overlay the behaviors of the Early Trade Network, which is more than 70,000 Australian business users. And at the moment, that's flashing essentially bright red, which means, you know, very high risk. Fair to say, you know, supply chains have gotten more focus than they probably ever have. But for us, it's really our bread and butter. So it feels like we're kind of, you know, in vogue or on trend at the moment, which, you know, is an interesting talking point.
So the shipping containers thing is an interesting one. You're saying that there's an aggregate lack of shipping containers, but then also the shipping containers we do have are scattered in places where they're just not getting picked up by the main supply chain routes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's spot on. Absolutely right. I mean, the easy one to understand is obviously the shortage. You know, it makes sense, right? You're shifting your consumption from services into goods. So purely the number of goods being transported is increasing. I guess part of the Amazon effect as well, you know, people obviously ordering online and now coming from all different parts of the world. It's interesting when you actually look at the, you know, shipping price sort of config around the world. a lot of those containers or those container ships are actually moving, you know, only half full in some directions, but then on the way back, for example, you know, there might be three or four times where demand is exceeding supply there.
So obviously, inflation is a lagging indicator. So we just got these, the September quarter figures, and it had headline inflation at 3%. And that seems to have been driven mostly by new dwelling prices and fuel. Of course, dwelling prices have been going gangbusters for quite some time. So that seems like it's nothing new. And then there's fuel, but a lot of the other categories seem to be, you know, not so bad. I look at, you know, clothing and footwear, for instance, is negative 3.8%. Do you expect that to jump up now that we've reopened and everyone's hitting the shops?
Yeah, I think the reopening sort of discussion is a really interesting one, and we kind of look at it. You know, we've got sort of previous, you know, backward looking sort of data as an indicator, but also then taking a view on, you know, things like business confidence and consumer confidence, and what are they sort of pointing towards. So, you know, if we roll back, I guess to, you know, mid last year when the initial lockdown ended, you know, there was a big bump in GDP as we all essentially got back out there and spent, in, you know, the money that we hadn't been able to spend up until then. And that was, you know, from memory, the savings ratio jumped to about 20%, if not a little bit more. You know, that fell off significantly, as you'd imagine, with that GDP boost. But if we roll forward, you know, I think the broad expectation is for that to be repeated this time around, which, you know, sure, that could well be the case. You know, certainly the last week, if that's a good, you know, in New South Wales, if that's a good representation of the future, then absolutely that those sort of, you know, clothing and retail sectors should rebound. But for me, I think it's just, you know, if you dig beneath the surface, I think it's a little bit more murky in terms of, you know, one, if we look forward now, we're essentially going back into an economy where we do have, you know, we've got Delta in the community. So we're back in this living with COVID sort of scenario. What is, you know, what's the propensity of people to be out there doing what we would see as normal things on an ongoing basis? Secondly, you know, for businesses who, I guess, small and medium size in particular, to the extent, you know, they do get hit with COVID cases in their shop or their restaurant or whatever it might be, what does that mean for their productivity? You know, can they keep operating or do they have to shut down? And that's obviously going to have a tangible sort of effect going forward. I think the other interesting thing to look at as well is the breakdown of that spending last time around. So, you know, we all went out, we bought big items, we bought TVs, laptops, home office equipment, furniture, cars, even if we could get our hands on them. So, you know, this time around, they're all goods that obviously have, you know, significant sort of life. So we're probably not going right back out there and spending on those sort of goods this time around. If you add on to that, you know, the longer these lockdowns have gone on, I think we've all felt it, that you essentially get into this monotony or this cycle of kind of expecting more lockdowns again. So I think it's built this anxiety within consumers and businesses alike, you know, in terms of what actually happens in the future. Yes, obviously, vaccination rates are good, but to the extent something quickly reverses, where are they sitting from a consumption perspective?
How do you see the demand side story playing out? So we've had, you know, lots of helicopter money with COVID relief. We've had, you know, reserve banks around the world with their, you know, pumping money into the economy with QE, and that's all winding down. Do you see consumer demand also winding down with it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's as clear as that. Obviously, we do have, you know, that savings buffer. So I think it's you know, it's to the tune of sort of 60 billion that we've all got in additional savings now across the board. And as I say, the big question mark for me there is really, you know, if we return to normality very quickly and that money finds its way back through those I would say normal channels almost immediately, then sure, it's a very rosy outlook, absolutely. As I say, in my mind though, there's a real risk that you don't get you know, well, you certainly don't get the extent of that drop off in the savings ratio, because people become a bit more cautious and they're looking to say, you know what, I don't know what the unemployment story looks like. I don't know what, you know, my outlooks it looks like for my own state. You know, if we've got, you know, state divisions in terms of are the borders reopening, are they not reopening, those sorts of things. So it's actually quite it's quite murky from that perspective. Now, the interesting angle that we kind of look at, you know, through our platform is what's happening, I guess, on the business confidence side of things. And to me, you know, they're very closely related. That that sort of consumption story feeds into what are businesses, one, doing and two, willing to do in the near future. And based on the usage that we've seen, so our, you know, the usage of our platform, we actually view as a very good leading indicator for business confidence, particularly on the downside. You know, when businesses are less confident, they tend to come onto the platform, look at what cash they can get their hands on, and essentially bring those early payments into the door to give them a bit of certainty for the next few months or even weeks in some circumstances. So yeah, we've seen, you know, those big increases in platform usage through the early trade network, March last year, July also when we went into lockdown again this year, and then in September actually we saw an interesting spike. So for me, it's kind of pointing towards, you know, perhaps for this coming quarter, it is a bit of an unknown from a business confidence perspective. And then you can get into, you know, how does that flow through into all your other macro variables as well in the economy.
You mentioned before that the outlook is very murky, and you know, we talk about the global supply chain as if it's one thing, but of course it's many supply chains put together. Do you see this cost pressure across the board moving up in lockstep with one another, or will there be some areas that are significantly more under pressure than others?
Yeah, good question. I think it unfortunately won't be as coordinated as a lockstep sort of movement. And you can see that, you know, if you look across some of those issues that we touched on at the start, to me that a lot of the time they're kind of, you know, these pandemic sort of pressures that we've seen through the supply chains, they're actually compounding, you know, broader secular sort of changes that are occurring in those supply chains as well. So, you know, up into Asia, for example, there's a lot of porting issues where they don't have, you know, adequate sort of infrastructure in place, and they're sort of working to get that done. But it's been an ongoing journey, let's say. In the UK, you know, you've got essentially absolutely no foreplanning in terms of what post-Brexit life looks like. So obviously, we've seen, you know, over there a lack of lorry drivers for obviously the freight sort of community. So these sorts of issues, they're popping up, you know, within industry specific areas and geographic locations as well. So I think, you know, very, very important to look through the supply chains that you're looking at, you know, perhaps the companies that you're analyzing to say, well, you know, do these supply chain pressures actually create issues for my business in terms of the end product for their consumer or their user?
How much of a problem has Brexit been in terms of supply chains and inflationary pressures? Were the prophets of doom correct in their forecasts when before Brexit took place, or has it not been as bad as everyone thinks?
I think it's still. I think we're only just getting started on that journey, unfortunately. I think with such a quantum shift, you know, to borders as the most simplistic sort of view, right? You're seeing the wage pressures coming through into the UK, you know, and we've got some of them here in Australia as well. You know, very good example of when you do have a constrained supply of employees. To take a simple view, you know, you do start to get those areas where you know, there's significant shortages, and you end up that's what ends up driving your wage price or your wage cost inflation as well. So, yes, I don't know if the doomsayers have been entirely correct. But unfortunately, I'm probably erring on their side more than the other side of that sort of equation.
I'm moving to the RBA. What do you see the cash rate doing? The 3% CPI figure puts inflation at the top of its 2-3% target range. Do you see the RBA lifting rates sooner than the 2024 guidance, I think it was, that they've been running with?
Yeah, 2024, that's exactly right. I think they've been guiding that for a little while now. I think it's an interesting time. You know, we've essentially got a bond market that's going against the central bank now. So very interesting as to what happens over the next few months. You know, from a tapering perspective, if we look at that before we go down a rate hike sort of movement, I think it's fair to say that, you know, if we get a number like the latest inflation print, you know, if we get that for a couple of periods in a row, there's definitely going to be a lot of pressure on the RBA to bring that that commitment forward. Where do I sit? I would say, you know, yes, it's definitely an upwards movement. Obviously, it's not 2024, but likewise, it's probably not, you know, in the next 3 months, I would say. So maybe, you know, mid next year, I think is when you can start to see an official sort of tightening of monetary policy. Now, interestingly, I think before then, I think, you know, it's already starting to flow through, you know, some out of cycle rate hikes from some of the banks into the mortgage space already. So probably, you know, fair argument, if you can still lock in for 2 or 3 years, it might not be a bad thing to look at on your own sort of book. But yeah, it's definitely an upward movement. Probably mid to back end of next year is where I sit on that one.
Guy DeBell said that a little bit of inflation is a good thing. Do you think that's what he really believes in the current context of things, or is that you know, a bit of water on the markets on his behalf?
A combination of both, I think. I think longer term, he definitely sits in the first camp. You know, there's no doubt that, I guess, you can have good inflation and bad inflation, right? You know, if good inflation is coming from a good place in terms of being, you know, demand driven, and you kind of, you know, wages are moving up in step with that, then it kind of makes sense. But I think, you know, again, as we've seen through the early trade platform, you know, we're starting to see those pressures build up on the supply chain that won't just be for the next 3 months, for example. You know, there's shifts that are occurring that will be longer or impacting over a longer period than that. And I think the risk there is that you end up with, you know, a demand story, as I said at the start, that's maybe not as rosy as you would like it to be, but also these inflation pressures that are lingering for a while. And that's what I would view as, you know, bad inflation, and it potentially puts at risk, you know, what's happening on the monetary policy side of things. Are you actually tightening to quell those inflation pressures, but at the same time you're dampening the demand story as well, which, you know, don't want to get into the depths of stagflation too much, but, you know, I think it does create a kind of, you know, period of stagflationary pressure. Again, could be 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, that sort of time horizon.
What impact will America's big infrastructure spend, when and if it happens, have on inflation? On the one hand, investment itself is kind of an inflationary thing, but on the other hand, infrastructure spending, you'd imagine, would help alleviate some of these supply side issues.
Yeah, again, I think it comes back to the question you asked at the start. You know, there's going to be certain sectors within construction, for example, that are going to be impacted by, you know, a shortage of resources. So the timber example was an easy one. You know, we've gone through this year a global shortage of timber suppliers, which obviously put, you know, flow and effect into those supply chains, putting additional pressure and again driving those prices higher. So I think from that perspective, again, important to look at, you know, what particular investment are you looking at? What sort of project are you as a company or as an investor looking at? And what sort of risks can you actually identify within those particular supply chains as well? But yes, you know, no doubt that spending story, you know, again, it will create some inflationary pressures just purely from an activity perspective. To me, that's more of a good inflation story. You know, you're bringing obviously huge amounts of investment with that. You'd hope the unemployment story picks up. Obviously, it's again been potentially not so great over there over the last few months, probably not as good as we'd like anyway. So I think, yes, it's going to create, you know, a lot of opportunities from an employment perspective. And likewise, there'll be ripple effects, you know, through into the Australian economy as well, I've no doubt.
I know forecasts can be a mug's game, but give it a crack. Are you in the transitory inflation camp, or is inflation here to stay?
I've always been a lower for longer sort of mentality. I think there are bigger demographic sort of considerations from an inflation perspective, from a rates perspective. So I don't think they've necessarily changed, you know, things like an aging population, changes in productivity, technology, those sorts of things are here to stay. I think, as I say, the risk for me at the moment is really, you know, you've got a period of, I would say, up to 12 months, maybe even slightly longer, where these supply chain pressures are going to continue to exist. When you combine that on the other side with a demand story that's not, you know, it's certainly not where we would want it to be, from a business certainty and from a consumer confidence perspective, I think that's what creates the real risk. So it's probably not a shift in, you know, the underlying mentality. I think we're not going back to, you know, significantly higher rates anytime soon. But obviously it's all relative. You know, a 25 basis point move at the moment certainly looks fairly significant. But if we look longer term, you know, what does that actually look like from an all-in borrowing cost perspective? I think it's still going to be pretty cheap for the foreseeable.
Sam, this has been great. Thanks so much for joining us on Friends with Money.
Thanks, mate.
That was Sam McPherson, Head of Treasury at Early Trade. For more content like this, go to moneymag.com.au and be sure to sign up to Friends with Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au.